You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sand, your host for Perspectives, and joining me today is my co-host and producer, Dennis Wu, and he's here because we're going to do a special show to warn you pet owners about how to take care of your pets for summer. It's hot. We're dying. We can go out and get a big Slurpee or a Super Slurpee or whatever you want to call it, but our dogs can't, and so we need to be careful with man's best friend. So, Dennis, take it away.
Well, first off, thanks for having me on the show, and welcome, Randy Chenault. Thank you so much for coming back in from the El Paso Veterinary Association. Randy, you've been on a number of our shows, but this particular show I wanted to title Blistering Heat, Blistering Feet.
Absolutely, because, yeah. Thanks for having me. I enjoy being here with you guys. It's always fun, and yeah, it's hot. I mean, it is just hot out there. It was this afternoon 109, and it's still relatively early in the day, so I mean, we're on our way up. Triple-digit heats like that are always wicked for all of us, and as you said, Louie, I mean, our pets are certainly very susceptible to heat and heat stroke. So it's real important that we are aware of that and make sure that your pet has obviously lots of water, lots of shade. I kind of even try and have people, if they're going to be gone during the day, and if they can, back on their back patio, leave a window open, especially with evaporative cooling. You need to leave a window open anyway. That gives a source of cooler air for your animals to at least find. Keeping a fan on the patio helps a lot as well, even a box fan, just to move air around. It's been so hot and still, too, is the other thing. I mean, and that's just really, it's like an oven, and it's extremely dangerous. And kind of like what you're talking about, Dennis, I mean, not only is the ambient or the air temperature hot, I mean, try the ground. I mean, and when you and I are walking around barefooted, it takes us about 3 seconds to figure out that, wow, man, it's hot. And my feet are on fire, and these poor dogs don't have any option, And if you got grass or at least a wet, sandy spot for them and some shade, that's really, really important.
One of the things that you mentioned last time you were here, Randy, was something about ice or ice chips in the water, and that was good for dogs. And some people might be concerned that perhaps if they have an older dog, that the ice might be too much for them. What do you do?
Well, ice is always a good idea. I mean, you and I drink ice water, and it's certainly no different. And I'm getting to be an old dog myself here, Louie, so I can certainly appreciate that. But at the same time, the ice doesn't stick around that long. But, I mean, if you leave a bowl of water out, pretty soon that's going to be pretty darn warm as well. I mean, it's just going to absorb the heat from the surroundings. And so you're not talking about cool water anymore. I mean, if it's been sitting out there and it's, any large volume of water, that's good. It takes longer to heat up. But, it also takes a long time to cool down, and we never get that ability. And so ice is always a good idea because it does help cool the water down. It's not going to stay ice cold for very long, but it does bring that temperature down pretty quickly for these guys. And when they do drink it, it's cool water going in. That's going to also help regulate their body temperature. Dogs don't sweat like you and I do. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, so all of their, the majority of their cooling, they do sweat a small amount from their foot pads is all, but it's not near enough to cool their body. So, panting through their mouth, respiratory tract is the way that they cool themselves. And if their mouth is dry, they're not going to be able to be as efficient in cooling. Obviously a wet, slobbery mouth is going to be like your air conditioner. That's going to, work better as that evaporates. It's going to remove some heat, and that's how it works. So that's kind of the only way that they really do. And that's the problem with certain breeds of dogs here in El Paso this time of the year. I mean, all the little short-nosed guys, the main offenders that come to mind are the bulldogs, but also pugs and Boston Terriers, and now French Bulldogs are pretty popular. All those little guys that are, they really, really overheat extremely quickly at this time of the year. So
when people leave to go to work, they'll set the water food out somewhere if they leave the dog out, and there's shade there, but they don't realize that as the day goes by, the sun moves, and by the time they get home, that place that was shady is now sunny and hot.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's where, being aware and obviously thinking about what you're doing is so critical. And unfortunately, all the crises that we see are because of people not being – they're not malicious. They're not doing things that are, you know, stupid. It's just kind of because we're not thinking, you know, and that's a big difference. And unfortunately, things happen, and it does take just a second to kind of sit down and look at that, just like you brought up. Okay, it's nice and cool now because the sun's over here, and then as the day goes on and the sun moves over here, all of a sudden that's just blistering heat out in the middle of nowhere. And so – again, that's where, you know, even providing a shade for your dog, even if you have to go get one of those little pop-up tents or whatever you want to call it, so that at least they can follow the shade around as the sun moves, you know. And so that's the other thing. I mean, you and I go out, you know, we set up an umbrella at the beach, you know, pretty soon that's working, but then you got to change it because then you're getting sunburned. So same concept. You just need to kind of make sure that everything – and we live in a big beach, by the way, so that's kind of that's nothing but we are. No water, but lots of beach. So
as we head towards the 4th of July holiday, even though there is, quote-unquote, a fireworks ban, you know that some moron is going to come in town with firecrackers and start popping them off. And you know that our canines and felines as well, all
absolutely.
Of them, all of our pets get freaked out over the sound of a loud, sharp crack. Now, how do we calm our little kids, shall we?
You know, that's a great question. I get posed that question on a regular annual basis. I mean, and thunderstorms are kind of fall into that same category. I mean, obviously, the best thing we can do is obviously find a place for the pet that feels secure, probably inside, obviously. They also make a pretty nifty thing called a thunder shirt that I have seen. And it's actually like a vest type thing that you put on your pet. They make them for both dogs and cats. And it's a secure – and it almost is like a snug-fitting vest that you put on, and it gives them some security. And makes no sense to me why that works, but it does. You know, I've seen too many dogs. That's always the first a good thing to start with, you know, I mean, because it's relatively easy to find. I'm sure that if it's not here locally in our pet stores, then you can probably find it on the internet. Pharmacological manipulation is always an option that we do have as well. I try and avoid that if possible, unless the dog is just really, really, really freaking out over those things. And, I mean, that's available. I mean, if we had to in a pinch, the problem is, and 4th of July is something we can kind of prepare for, but like thunderstorms, and if and when we ever get any, kind of blow up pretty quick. And unless you – most of these medications, if you don't start them an hour or two before, you know, they don't do any good after the anxiety has already started. So that's something that, you know, there's better things out there as far as that goes. The last thing that has been advocated by a lot of behavior people is what they call sound desensitization, where, you know, and using hypothetically the thunderstorms, you know, they make those little CD soundtracks that have like rain, and, you know, you start playing those kind of on a continuous loop at a very, very low volume, and your dog kind of gets used to that. Is that, I mean, the idea, and again, that takes weeks to months for that to happen. But I mean, again, if we can kind of plan these things, we can kind of train these guys out of these things. Cats kind of fall in the same category. I mean, they're not cats are usually pretty good about finding a good safe place and going and hiding and, you know, waiting for their staff to show up to, you know, bring them their food and water and, you know,
right,
rescue them, so to speak. But, you know, so, I mean, it's kind of difficult for cats, but cats are usually somewhat more self-sustaining. You know, not quite as bad about getting freaked out about it.
Call it a folktale, if you will, but I've always heard, too, that a touch of lavender in a room with the animal will soothe the animal. My hesitation to that is because we're humans and we have noses that are somewhat desensitized to everything, we may not know how much is too much for the canine or feline.
Yeah, absolutely. And that I don't know. And that may be true with lavender because I know it is calming supposedly for people as well. But along those lines, they make these like the little plug-in diffusers that you use for your room freshener. But they make them out of pheromones for especially cats. And you plug them in and they stay in all the time. And they're actually a pretty good source of a calming effect for that. It's called Feel Away is for the cats. And I do believe they make something along those lines for dogs, but cats are more susceptible or more amenable, I think, to that, you know, because they are so territorial.
This is also vacation time. So the question here is, we pack for humans all kinds of stuff, you know, our clothes or everything. For our pet to go on vacation with us, what do we need to do? What should we do in order to keep our pet happy?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a great question with everybody hopefully traveling and doing things. And first off, if your pet's going to travel with you, make sure that wherever you're going is pet friendly. I mean, that you can have a place if you're going to stay in a hotel that it's okay and they allow that, because the last thing you want to do is get there and either have to sneak them in and get caught or, you know, not be able to stay. You know, boarding facilities are an option that some people will opt to use as well in lieu of taking their pet with them. However, with pet travel, you know, obviously the first thing that comes to mind is you need to think about if your pet's on any medications, you know, and make sure you pack and you have an ample supply of medications to get you through the holiday time or your travel time. Obviously food, you know, whether you need to take a big giant supply of food or is it some food you can pick up when you get there. If your pet's on a special diet, then obviously those are the things you need to think about as well. You know, making sure that if there is some sort of a, you know, a leash and a collar is obviously a good idea for your pet. Is, you know, if you're going to be stopping at the roadside park, you know, the last thing you want to do is have your dog running around. I had an incident where a good friend of mine was traveling from here down towards Austin and stopped at a roadside rest area. Oh, gosh, this was last year. In the middle of all the drought, but, you know, their little Jack Russell dog was running around and, you know, was just checking things out and all of a sudden jumped back, yelled, and didn't really think anything of it. Well, they went driving down the road and about 15, 20 minutes later, his head started to swell up. He had been bitten by a rattlesnake because,
oof.
Yeah, yeah, and so they had to find somebody in a critical crisis, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, weird things happen and you can't prepare for everything, but certain things we can avoid by being a little bit proactive, like just keeping them on a leash at a rest area and things like that.
I like the idea about finding a pet-friendly hotel or motel. La Quinta comes to mind. Super 8 comes to mind. Super 8 charges $10 extra for your pet, but that's $10 well spent because your pet gets to stay there. What I did when I had to go to Ruidoso for a weekend, and I never travel. So when I travel, I take Xena with me, and I had to pack a suitcase for her that had her own blanket, her own doll, her own bowl, food, the whole nine yards. I mean, she was packed more than I was.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a couple of T-shirts, a couple of shorts, and we're good.
Yeah, you're good to go, man. You had a duffel, and she had the overnight Pullman, whatever, big, yeah. Well, and that's true, and kind of the blessing about it, I mean, and that's fine if you can do that. I mean, if you can pack all their own, you know, goodies, so to speak. Dogs are pretty adaptable is the cool thing about it. If they're with us and they're happy, you know, if they don't have their bowl, they're still probably going to eat okay. I mean, again, this for the average, you know, most dogs. I mean, certain ones are a lot more, you know, clingy and needing, which is fine. I mean, that's yeah. But most dogs are pretty adaptable, and they're pretty happy just being there with you.
Yeah, Xena's kind of like that, but I think I like to treat her more of a diva than she wants to be.
Yeah, well, that's all of us, yeah. Dennis. That's the problem. We all have a diva in our life, a four-legged diva.
That's always good.
As far as what Dennis was talking about and perhaps eating, sometimes, you know, with the holidays coming up, there are a lot of leftovers, and of course, you know, the dog will be on its hindquarters there just waiting for someone to drop something. And some people are concerned about the fact that the dog may get into the trash can or eat something, not realizing, I guess, that not that they're supposed to, but the fact that their digestive system is quite different from ours.
They are. And, you know, speaking about dogs, cats are different than dogs. They're not little small dogs is one of the sayings that we always try and remember. Dogs are omnivores, theoretically, like people. And obviously they can do okay and with a varied diet to an extent. The problem is if they're eating the same thing, relatively speaking, which is what I recommend, don't change foods. They're not going to get bored sitting there going, wow, I'm eating the same old dry crap again like you've given me. They're just kind of going, wow, cool, I got food. You know, most dogs are pretty happy with that. when we change things thinking that they're going to get bored or things, that's when we start, I start seeing a lot of problems with their intestinal tract. And so they don't adapt well to a lot of change. Some dogs that obviously eat a lot of different things on a regular basis do fine. Ideally, if you can keep them on a pretty consistent diet and a pretty balanced diet, then that's the best thing to do. So, yeah, when they get into the trash or they get into the leftovers and we think we're doing them a big favor by giving them a piece of that, you know, leftover hamburger or the steak or whatever it is, they love it. They're not going to tell you, no, that's not good for me. But sometimes and many times that does have an adverse effect on their intestinal tract, and we'll see a lot of times vomiting and diarrhea after that. So,
what about, as you and I were talking about, our dog who is sick, we're not sure what's wrong with her, but sometimes when she has that cone around her and that bleeding will be there and you see some of that blood on the cone, we'll catch her, licking it off.
Yeah, cleaning that up.
And so does that hurt an animal?
Well, it doesn't hurt them. And the volume of that is so small and relatively speaking. And that's where, again, it's kind of dose dependent, if you will. And so, no, that's not bad. Or they'll lick a wound, an open wound, and they lick on that all the time. And although it smells bad and it looks bad and everything else, that not necessarily is bad for the dog to ingest that stuff. But when they find things in the yard, they're always happy to go find something that's dead or foul or whatever it is. And first thing they do is roll in it, and the second thing they do is eat it so they can enjoy it, So those are the sorts of things. So I think it depends on what it is and how much it is too. And I've had dogs that have gotten ill from just changing dog food brands, from one to the other. And abruptly changing. Now, if you need to change your dog's food, that's fine. But you need to do it all gradually over several days' time to a week rather than just doing it from A to B overnight.
And I guess that's like when someone is traveling and they go to another country or somewhere else, they eat a different type of food. It affects it differently.
Very similar to that.
As far as accidents which may happen on the 4th of July because of the fireworks, because of everything, if someone needs to administer – first aid to one of their pets, can they use the typical first aid if it's something minimal as they would for a child or for themselves? And I'm talking about, alcohol, iodine, anything like that, or do they have to be extra careful with the animal as far as stinging and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I get a lot of people that use alcohol in ears or on a wound or something, and I'm thinking, ouch, that's the first thing that comes to my mind. And I kind of want to grab them and say, look, dude, would you put that on your cut? How does that feel with you? The same thing applies. And you'll do that once, and your dog will remember that forever. And so you come at them with the bottle of whatever it is. They're you're not going to get a chance at them again. So, let's just take a wound, a laceration, for instance. Yes, I think cleaning it up is good. Warm water probably is as safe as anything. Flushing it out, doing your best to keep it as clean as possible. Using some sort of a topical antibiotic on it is also a good idea. Those sorts of things are fine. And again, that's just kind of, a Band-Aid. This is not meant to try and treat. If there's a problem, that's what the emergency center here in El Paso is for, or your regular veterinarian during regular hours. Unfortunately, we see a lot of wrecks that people have tried to fix on their own, and they, wait till it's a problem. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, man, I can't fix this. And then it's twice as bad to try and deal with. A lot of little minor things we can fix quickly.
Randy, I'm not sure if you can answer this or not, but some people may have animals and something happens and they don't take the dog to the vet because they can't afford it. And so some people might accuse them of being bad dog owners, stuff like that, and they feel just as bad about the dog. Are there any organizations that you know of that could help out people like that? Does the county have anything like that you might be aware of?
I think probably that there are facilities, and yes, I'd start with like the Humane Society, to ask them questions. And I know there's a lot of rescue organizations and things like that. To answer that question, thoroughly and say, yes, this is who you call. I can't do that for you, Louie, because I don't know.
And with this day and age of internet, they can Google everything.
I was going to say, yeah, information is way too easy to get nowadays. We can get answers to anything. And so, yeah, I think I'd probably start with either internet search or a phone call. I would imagine that someone at, like I said, the Humane Society or Animal Control should be able to, I mean, Animal Services, they should be able to help us answer questions like that. I know for situations like, you know, the cat overpopulation we've talked about here, Dennis, you know, the feral cat program is in effect, and that's administered by an organization, and I wish I could tell you who that is. I know it's a functional organization. I want to say it's under what used to be called Pets Alive.
Right.
I don't know if that's still their name or not, but I mean, there are, there are a lot of organizations out there that can help. And, you know, people want to, you know, nobody wants to see their pet go through misery. And just like that, there's a lot of people that will assist as well. Nobody wants to see animals be.
And I was thinking too, because in some instances you have older people who are by themselves, and that dog or cat is the only friend they've got.
That's all they've got. You're exactly mm-hmm. right. And that's a good point, because there are I know years ago there used to be a group called TheraPet Elder Care. And I'm sure they're still – I hope they're still around. I don't know enough about them. But again, that was exactly what they would do, is I can remember being involved with that and going to see this little old lady that had a really – you know, this dog, I mean, lived with this lady, I think, 24 hours a day in her wheelchair. You know, I mean, and it was like going over there, we, you know, would, and it was really neat, because this group did – was available, and they were able to go ahead and get, you know – food and medications and things like that for these guys. So it was kind of neat.
One of the things that I've always thought about when it comes time to be deployed elsewhere for military families who will be listening to this program, they have their pet and all of a sudden they're being told, I'm sorry, you can't take your pet. And they don't want to take it to a place where euthanization is
an option, it's not an option, yeah.
So is it smart to go to the Google thing and find a no-kill outfit, or?
Well, absolutely, if you can. You know, our Humane Society is striving to be a no-kill facility, and from what I understand, doing a very good job. I mean, unfortunately, though, Animal Control is, you know, has to do their duty, and, I mean, there's still in upwards of 25,000 animals that are euthanized every year around here in El Paso just because of, you know, that's a whole other topic. That's a whole other show we could go on.
Sure, that's overpopulation. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. But there are rescue organizations on Google that you can actually set up with. I mean, I know that we work with the Golden Retriever Rescue Association at my office, and we will kind of babysit some of those guys until they find a home as an interim home or whatever, you know. So there are groups out there, and I mean, just about all breeds have a rescue group, so to speak. And that's a great option. But again, the Humane Society does a great job. You know, the problem is there's just too many of them out there, and we can't find homes for everybody. And so that's when these other groups come in. Yeah. You know, Animal Rescue here in El Paso is wonderful at what they do. So there's a bunch of places out there that you can take your dog. The thing I shiver and just get, you know, sideways about are the people that think, oh, well, he's a dog, he'll be fine, we'll go take him out there and drop him off, you know. And, you know, that's the analogy of me driving you out to the middle of the desert and saying, dude, you're smart, you can figure it out, you know, and let me drop you off here and see how well you fare, you know. And mm-hmm. that's just not right, you know, and people really, really need to be reprimanded. For the nicest word I can use. And there's a lot of other terms that come to mind, obviously. Oh, no, absolutely not. That's a rare instance when that happened.
This is the time of year where radiators boil over and leave that nasty antifreeze everywhere. Even the new cars will do this.
Mm-hmm.
Cat lovers need to know how to keep their felines from lipping up and getting poisoned by that, because they'll look at it and find it.
Yeah, and not just cat lovers. I mean, dog lovers, too. I mean, anybody. Yeah. I mean, you know, when it's hot like this and your dog's out, and let's just say your dog accidentally gets out and is running around and is looking for water, and it's like, oh, wow, there's some on the side of the road. I'll drink that water because I'm thirsty. The bad thing about antifreeze is it has a sweet taste. And a very small amount, as little as a tablespoon, is enough to be lethal for most animals, you know. And it's not an instant thing. I mean, it takes... it causes a kidney failure, renal toxicosis, and it's a bad deal, and it's a horrible way for an animal to go.
So how do we hip these people to make sure that their animals don't do that?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously having control of your animal, I mean, you know, on a leash or whatever when you're walking, I mean, don't just let them be off leash. I mean, I think that's great and dandy, but, you know, I personally feel like, you know, that's somewhat irresponsible. I mean, and again, I'm probably stepping on a lot of toes here, but I see people walking their dogs without a leash, and I think that's really cool. But, I mean, you know, you're in an area, you know, where there's cars, there's, you know, whatever. And, I mean, too many times all it takes is for the dog to not be paying attention. All of a sudden look up, see a cat across the street, dart out in front of a car and get whacked, you know. And yep. You know, those sorts of things. I mean, obviously keeping control of your pet, making sure that if your car is the car that boils over, clean that up as soon as possible. I mean, don't leave it on the garage floor. Don't leave it in the driveway. You know, those are the two most obvious things that I can think of that come to mind. I mean, you know, because you can't stop a cat or a dog from drinking stuff unless you're watching them. You know, it's no different than a child. You know, would you give them a bottle of, you know, your drain cleaner, you know, underneath the sink? I mean, we're so, you know, I don't think you should put a leash on your kid, but some may need a leash, you know, one way or the other.
One of the things we have not talked about is besides getting your shots, how often should someone take a dog to get a checkup or to get groomed?
Sure. Well, and that's two different things because certain dogs require grooming more frequently. And,
correct.
You know, I mean, if you're going to do a lot of the grooming at home, brushing, bathing, that sort of thing, then obviously that affects the whole thing as well. So that's going to be breed dependent and everything else. As far as exams, you know, certainly we advocate at least once a year. I mean, the city license is only good for 1 year in El Paso. So you need to come in every year at least to get your dog a city license, and your veterinarian will recommend what vaccinations they require at that point. You know, we're all quick to say, oh, my dog is, you know, 10 or whatever or 13, so that's times 7, and that's how old they are. Well, and that's kind of true, but unfortunately it's not exactly, you know, linear like that. However, the concept is a good idea. When you're saying, you know, when was the last time you went to the doctor? If it's every 7 years, you know, then there's a lot of problems that arise because we don't get checked up. And if you wait a year or more than a year, obviously that's a pretty long time span in a dog's life.
Sometimes it's become where people think that they're almost experts, quote experts. So they said, well, I read it on the internet, and so it must be good. And so they think that they know more than their vet. So rather than taking them to the vet, they'll order something they saw online that's guaranteed to help or your money back and all that stuff.
Right, right.
So how do you kind of distinguish,
you know,
that?
We can't. I mean, you know, if it was that, I mean, there's no way to avoid that. I mean, obviously common sense. I mean, and some people are going to do it themselves just because they think they can. And
or folklore, right?
Well, exactly. You know, whatever it is. I mean, and, you know, there's no way around that. I mean, I can't try and train everybody that, look, you know, I mean, we do go to school for that, obviously. You know, I mean, it's 4 years of professional school after college, so it's not like you go and get a, you know, whatever. I mean, it's not like a high school education type of a thing. So the bottom line is we are professionally trained. We do know what we're talking about. And so the bottom line is that you need to either trust your veterinarian or, you know, deal with the consequences, I think, is probably the only thing I can tell you.
Well, Randy, thank you very much for being with us. We've been visiting with Dr. Randy Chenault, veterinarian here in El Paso. And if you have a question or a comment, and as Randy mentioned, there is a lot of information out there.
And actually, you could probably just call the El Paso Veterinary Association or call any veterinarian that you happen to be going to in order to get those questions answered.
That's probably a good idea, yeah.
Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Science.